Hello, and welcome back to the Stories from the Ashes podcast, where we pontificate on good books and the stories that define and refine us. I'm your host, Amber Sauter, and I'm here today with our good podcast friends, Charlessa and Kimberly. Welcome, ladies.
Hello.
Thank you.
Today, we are going to be talking about our favorite winter books, and we decided we weren't going to include Christmas books, just winter books. But our last episode was with Kimberly, and she shared a whole bunch of humorous books. And as I'm sure most of you can imagine, as soon as you're done recording, you start thinking of all the things that you wish that you'd said. And Kimberly has a short list of books that she wished she'd recommended. And I told her she could have a 3-book addendum to add to the last episode that was pretty fun if you guys missed it. But Kimberly, do you want to share 3 more humorous books before we jump into our winter books?
I do, but I didn't know we were going to do this at the very beginning. And I
if we don't do it now, I'm going to forget and then you'll be sad.
Well, the evidence shows I will remind you at the end.
Yes, that is true.
Oh, here, I found it in our text. Okay. The one that I was thinking of this morning was The Old Woman Who Named Things, Cynthia Ryland. And as Amber pointed out, it's funny, but it's more than funny. It's emotionally powerful. It says something. It doesn't only entertain.
Yes. I love that you like brought that up as a funny book, because I'm like, yeah, I think my kids thought it was humorous. I cried.
Well, I did too. I cried and I laughed. And it was one of those books where I was like, I'm emotionally so confused.
Cynthia Ryland is like an expert at emotionally confusing you when you get to the end of the book being like, man, how did I feel about this?
There's another one that I don't know if I said in the podcast, but we texted about it later and you told me it's one of your favorites. And coincidentally, I was going to bring it up later in this podcast anyway, but Animals Should Definitely Not Wear Clothing.
Mm-hmm.
By Judy and Ron Barrett. It is funny. Yes.
And I had shared with you that there's a sequel to that one. Have you had a chance to check it out yet?
I'm going to be real. I totally forgot you said that.
You what?
I'm going to be real with you. I totally forgot.
Oh,
you
no,
said
that's
that.
Funny. You have that to look forward to.
You're right. I do. But I also, did I remember to share last time about Miss Jasper's Garden and The Duchess Bakes a Cake, both published by Purple House Press. And both funny. I will say Miss Jasper's Garden, I just think it's hilarious. Hilarious. I think they're both funny.
It's humorous. It's delightful. I gift it to all the over 50 women who love to garden that I know. And they all thoroughly enjoy it. Yeah.
I think there's a good chance they probably laugh more than my kids. My kids think it's funny. But I think woman of a certain age who loves to garden would think it's funny in a different way.
Yeah, especially somebody who absolutely needs their glasses to know what's going on in the world around them.
So those are my 3 that I wanted. Actually, it was 4, but those are my 4 of Animals Should Not Wear Clothing.
Yes.
Old Woman Who Named Things, Miss Jasper's Garden, and Duchess Bakes a Cake.
Perfect. I'm going to share a poem and then we can jump into these books. So I really like the poem Winter by Walter de la Mare. And I was reading this aloud to the kids earlier today. And it says, "And the robin flew into the air, the white mist threw, the small and rare. The night frost fell into the calm and misty dell, and the dusk gathered low, and the silver moon and stars on the frozen snow drew taper bars, kindled winking fires in the hooded briars, and the sprawling bear growled deep in the sky, and Orion's hair streamed sparkling by, but the north sighed low, snow, snow, more snow." To which Inara responded, "How can you possibly still have more snow to give?" Because the 3 of us have had this conversation, and I'm sure people listening can completely relate to this spectrum of how we feel about winter, because we live in very different places. So do you guys want to share where you're from?
Sure.
That's fine. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so we're I'm from Iowa, and then yeah, Charlessa, you're
in Nebraska. And this, yeah.
Well, I'm in Northwest Arkansas. People hear Arkansas and they think South, but Northwest Arkansas is it's different than the rest of the state, where it's definitely more, we get more, it's more mountainous than the rest of the state. It's not the Delta or the River Valley. And it makes a big difference in the weather, even an hour away.
Yeah, I can imagine. So as we were entering winter, I was talking about how much I loved it. Charlessa does not love winter.
No, I don't like fall. Winter is my thing.
That's right. You don't like fall. You like winter. And Kimberly, who doesn't really get winter, just was like not on board. And then
I love winter the 3 days that we have it.
Yes. Yeah.
Because around here, when we actually get a moment of winter, everything shuts down. Everything stops. And all my family is home together. My husband is home. And all my little ducklings are in the nest, and it makes me very happy.
Yes.
Didn't you just text say you were ready for another snowstorm?
I am. I was just thinking yesterday, I was like, you know, it's been, because we got, like a week ago, we got all that snow, and we even had a little pretend ice storm that flirted with us for a minute, and it was just so lovely. And now it's been like a week in the 50s, and it's time. I need some more.
So to put it in perspective, this winter storm, snowstorm you just had, how many inches did you get?
Almost 3-4
Yeah.
Which is
funny. That's a lot for us.
Yeah, we didn't get any snow. Y'all were getting snow, and we still functioned in life up here. Like,
you
below zero.
-8 million degrees yes, and still going to swim practice. And I'm like, oh, no. It's cold. You stay home. What are we doing?
So at the beginning of the month, we got almost 2 feet of snow, which is kind of ridiculous. Because usually when we do get snow, because we got 2 feet over two snowstorms about 72 hours apart. So the first one brought about a foot, the second one brought about a foot. And typically, the way it works here in Iowa is you'll get a good snow, it'll last for like 3 days, and then it'll start to melt. And so by the time you get the next snow, like you only have a few inches, and a few inches is doable. 6 feet piled up at the end of my driveway from clearing snow, giving you like terrible visibility for pulling out, is not my favorite. And this time we went from this 2 feet of snow straight into -42 wind chill for a week. And so there's been like no melting until this week. And now it just feels like the world is flooding because we've never had like this much snow to melt so quickly. And so it's so foggy, and it's terrible to drive on the highways because visibility is, it's like a blizzard, like, you know, that split pea soup fog. So yeah, different winter experiences definitely can also affect like how you look at children's books. Like we're always getting books from people in the South that are like, I'd like a winter book that doesn't involve snow because my kids don't have snow. And, and this could again, just be my perspective, having always lived north, is because like this, I've literally lived on a line my whole life, basically. Like I was born in Bloomington Normal in Illinois and then moved north to Chicago. And then I've lived on that line since I was five. So Chicago straight across to like Ames, which is a little bit north, and then back to Iowa City, which is, again, we're just right on that highway that goes across the country. And then like now Cedar Rapids, which is slightly north, but like always on the same plane of existence. But the South, when they ask for these books, I'm just like, I mean, really, doesn't a fall book work for you? Like, isn't it the same down there?
No, because the colors are all wrong. A fall book has reds and oranges, and I want a winter book that reflects the gray and the dreary and all the leaves being, all the trees being bare.
Yeah.
But it, like, I think that the reason Charlessa hates fall is because actually it's winter. Her when she describes her fall, that's how I describe winter. Her fall, she says it's like dreary and gray and cold and windy. With no snow to redeem it. And that's what our winter is mostly like. Right now out the window, it's just, it's one color.
Yeah. For people who aren't familiar with Nebraska, like the postcard joke when you're a tourist is that the telephone poles are Nebraska's trees. Yeah. Nebraska is one of the flattest states, if not the flattest. Absolutely. And so the wind just blows. There's nothing to stop it.
And see, and fall for us is harvest. So you have these huge machines in the cornfields harvesting and blowing out all this dust and dirt and, you know, shucks and all this, and then tumbleweeds. Right. It's just, it's disgusting. So I like snow because it covers all the disgust. It just like makes it pretty and white.
And you persuaded me when you were describing your fall and you said something about all the shucks in your fence. I'm like, yeah, no, that's not a thing. That doesn't happen here. What are we talking about?
I live in town. And so to have shucks in my fence is kind of crazy, but
yeah, that doesn't happen to me.
But then I remember I did go to school in Arkansas where you're at. So I do kind of vaguely remember how pretty fall was in Arkansas. It's
beautiful. Yeah.
But I will stay to my rural Nebraska life. So you all can make fun of me. So you all can laugh at me.
I'll join you in the winter when you get actual snow. I'm just not going to leave the house and do anything like you have to do.
Yeah.
I'm fine. I love winter as long as I can nest and stay inside my little.
I think it was like palace. 10 years ago, I decided I was no longer going to drive if I found the roads to be at all sketch. And I have pretty low standards. So I pretty much hibernate all winter. And if we go anywhere, Eric drives. And it's wonderful because we get so much reading in front of the fire done when we don't leave the house. So I think that's part of what I love about winter. But let's jump into our books that we like to read that speak winter to us. I think like the classic children's book would have to be The Snowy Day by Ezra and Jack Keats. And
that is not what I thought you were going to say.
What did you think I was going to say? What would you think is the absolute classic?
Well, I want to hear what you were going to say about Snowy Day.
Well, I was just going to say that I love how diverse it is. I love that it's an urban setting, which you don't get very often in children's books, period, let alone season books. And that it's just this little kid, free range parenting, going on a little adventure and experiencing snow for themselves. And this book was so powerful in my kids' lives because they decide, like, they model after a lot of what they see. And so this inspired my boys, who did not want to go out in the cold, to go out alone in the cold after snow to have their own snowy day adventure. And they would ask, like, how many houses down they could go before they had to come back. But they would just go stomp in the fresh snow and have this lovely little thing. And I think most of my generation grew up with this as one of the classic Reading Rainbow books. And so we know the little, like, I can hear it in my head, the little scholastic story being played out on Reading Rainbow and the little bell noises and whatnot in the background as he's just off on his little adventure. And it's almost all white. Like, the illustrations are just very snowy. So I just think it's a classic snow book. So what were you thinking, Kimberly? Well,
I thought you were going to say The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, always winter and never Christmas.
Well, yes, that is on here. But I was thinking picture
books. You were thinking picture books. Yes, When you just say the classic winter book, I wasn't thinking picture book. But I think a conversation about wintry picture books, you have to talk about Jan Brett.
Yeah. She is a little excessive. I mean, she does really enjoy Oh, yes. Charlissa has one right there.
Oh, you have
one.
Yeah,
I checked it out. Yeah. What do you want to say? I do think she's very prolific. They're not my favorite. Yeah.
It's not your favorite?
It's a little too much.
Oh, no, it's so wonderfully much.
Okay, how many worlds do you know that the yak is being, like, the Arctic wolf is sleeping on the yak? Like, that's, like, so not going to happen.
I'll tell you what will happen. Sleeping on yaks. Where else should they sleep? I bet it's very warm and soft there.
No, I'm going to tell you this. This is what happens during snow. You pile it up, and every kid plays King of the Mountain. And you just, like, love it.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
With your 2-inch King of the Mountain.
Yeah. You know, this is the one that freaks out in Texas and goes, we're getting snow. And it's like, that's a dusting.
Yeah.
That's a dusting. I think you have to talk about her. Yes.
Yes.
The two Jan Breads that I put on my list were The Mitten and The Hat. Oh, and actually, I think it's funny that you're like, she's a bit much. And I'm over here like, she likes winter accessories.
Yeah. I do like the mitten. I just like the mitten as a story period.
And I do too. Think
that her illustrations are pretty on that one.
The hat is the one that was going to lead me into animals should definitely not wear clothing, because that's basically the end of the hat also. Mm-hmm. And so I can't read the hat without thinking of the other. And then I'm laughing and it makes me happy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of it, right? Like, it's what books spark joy.
Yes.
And make a connection with you and your kids. And we see that all the time in the Facebook group where parents are like, my kid loves this book. And I'm like, yeah, that's a super sweet book. And the parent's like, I can't stand it. And I'm like, okay, so clearly personal taste is coming into play here. And they want something that's like similar, but that they might like. And so it is like, it's a personal taste thing. I feel like Jan Brett's books all look alike. They don't really stand out different to me. And so when I'm like, yes, she's prolific and it's all the same, that's where it's like, pick a few that are your favorite. And I don't personally feel a need to collect all of them. Other people love it so much that they don't mind that it all looks the same. And honestly, like, Brandon Sanderson could keep writing the Skyward books forever and they could still all be basically the same plot. And I'd probably keep reading them just because I enjoy the story and I enjoy the people. So I'm sure it's the same way for people with Jan Brett that are like, I like the Swedish aesthetic and I just want to look at this Nordic illustration style all the time. And that's great. But yes, you do have to bring her up when you're talking about winter books because she is the reigning prolific illustrator of.
Well, and I think our kids need to see that. They need to start to see what an author does similarly. Yeah. You know, she's really good about it. So they can pick it out themselves and they can start to draw the conclusions. My kids would love to have Brandon Sanderson write more of his Alcatraz series because that's where they got hooked. And so I see why parents would keep on adding those to their home to help their child build upon what they like.
Yeah.
love that she has a distinct style. And to Charlesse's point, Jan Brett was one of the first illustrators that we could go to a bookstore and my kids would say, hey, it's a Jan Brett. Mm-hmm. Even before they were reading the name, they recognized the style.
They're finding friends at the bookstore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And actually, if you go to her website, I think she's very deliberate about having, like, this is what her hedgehogs look like. This is what her bears look like. And I think she is consistent kind of on purpose. And I feel like she's almost built a whole wintry world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you've spent a lot of time on her website. So you're basically like a diehard fan and we're just like,
I'm not. Someone here. Someone in the group posted, it's got to be probably 2 years ago now, but she had like coloring pages you could print.
Oh, fun.
And when my kids were smaller, before we were doing school that filled up some of our time, I was just needing things to do.
Yeah, that's cool. So another picture book that I really like with a heavy winter theme that I don't see enough people talking about anymore is Brave Irene by William Stieg. And I love that one for so many reasons. One, it's straight up winter. Like, she's slogging through all this snow in the whole book. But the premise is her mother's a dressmaker and she has a delivery to make that is time sensitive. And the mom has a chronic illness and she can't do it. And so her daughter takes up the torch and delivers this package through the winter storm and is brave and does it. And there's so few books I have found that have parents with chronic illnesses. And that is something that my children live with, is a parent with a chronic illness. And the fact that we talk about how, you know, we're only as strong as our weakest link and we have to take care of our weakest members when they need it. And we rotate that through, right? Like, when someone's sick, they're the weakest member and they get taken care of. And when there's babies, they get the most time and care. And just being aware of who needs extra help around you and being willing to step up and do it. And so I just love Irene's example of stepping up and doing it, even though it's braving this blizzard, basically.
I like that.
And it's funny. Have you read it?
I read it years ago. It obviously didn't stick.
Yeah.
I like it. It's now I'm adding it to my shopping cart because I'm like, oh, yeah, that should go in my winter. I have a winter books display. You know, that's how we roll around here. Yep. And so, yeah. But another one is like Henry the Explorer. You know, when he goes out, that's a good one to show all the season, you know, like the different books have different seasons. And, right. you know, Jan Brett does that too. She has, you know, her mermaid one, she has different landscapes and stuff like that. But I think that's good how they show that different, the seasons in different locations.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
For so I'm actually really excited. Oh, sorry. You're trying to move on to chapter books, but I have another picture book that I have to talk about.
I'm just planning to bounce back and forth, but go ahead.
No, if it doesn't come up, I would cry, because my single very favorite picture book of all the picture books in the whole wide world is The Lion and the Bird and by Marianne Dubuque. And it's kind of what Charlessa just said about Henry is it shows the seasons. But it spent several pages showing winter. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's my little one crying in the background. her daddy's home. It's fine. It spent several pages on winter. And it's another one like The Woman Who Named Things, where it's a nice picture book. It's for children. Yeah. But the meaning is incredibly poignant. And I feel like I'm sure I get more out of it than my children. And I read it with my children. I can't not cry.
Yeah. It's a special book.
It is an incredibly special book. And I just, thinking of seasons, it's a good one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a good one. I was going to say for chapter books, I really enjoyed Jack and Jill when I was a kid by Louisa May Alcott. And it is a male and female friend of different tax brackets, and they have a sledding accident and get very injured and are laid up for the rest of winter in recovery. And so just all the life and hustle and bustle happening around them as they're pulling through. And then I think Louisa May Alcott just writes good winter feel books, because Little Women covers multiple seasons, obviously, as we're going through years of people's lives. But the scenes that I remember the strongest from the book are almost all winter related scenes. And so I think that she just invokes winter very well, and her books are just very cozy, and so they read like things you just want to curl up in front of a fire.
So I have not really read Alcott. I remember my mom encouraging me to when I was younger, but I never did. So this is a real question. Would you think that what you just described, do you think that's true in part because of what we were saying earlier, that winter is kind of just a time to stay home and read together? It's just a cozy season inherently. And I wonder if, having not read the books, I'm wondering if she's developing her story around those moments, because that's when life tends to give you those relational moments.
Yeah, I think that in Jack and Jill, it definitely forces the slowing down and everybody being indoors aspect. But with Little Women, I think a large part of it is just that their relationships are so cozy. They're so close to each other. They're so intimate and want to spend all of their time together for the most part. And so I think that cozy feel just carries over even. So even like the seasons that aren't winter in the story still feel cozy.
Mm-hmm. That sounds nice.
Yeah. I have two books that traumatized me as a child, but are like winter classics. And that would be The Long Winter and On the Banks of Plum Creek by Laura Ingalls Wilder for Little House on the Prairie books. And those winter scenes are just intense. Like Pa only being a few meters away from the house, sleeping in a snowbank, eating all the winter candy so he doesn't starve to death.
Yeah.
And like, because of the storm, like the storms were so intense. And I think that On the Banks of Plum Creek was just extra traumatic, because you go from the locusts killing everything to then this blizzard almost taking Pa. And I was always really encouraged by Ma and just in awe of her ability to keep going and do what needed to happen in all of these books. But at the same time, I was just like, why are people choosing this life? Didn't even understand it. But The Long Winter, you know, just like knowing a lot of people did not survive it was just really hard. And it just, and I hate, I hate stories where people just cannot get ahead and the blows just keep coming. And that's what A Long Winter felt like. Like every time it seemed like winter might be letting up or there might be a little tiny iota of hope, just the great north stomped his foot down. It was like, no, here's more snow and more snow and more snow.
But that, I'm sure that's why people don't like winter. It, mm-hmm. You know, January is 31. I mean, it's a long month.
Yeah.
And if it's cold and you can't get out and you can't do, you get off of Christmas where it's all celebration and doing that thing. All the sensors have been, you know, overloaded. And now we're stuck inside possibly. And that's where I think we all thrive because we're like, yeah, we're stuck inside and we can take a summer scene book and be stuck inside and still thrive.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it can be depressing. I can get that. Like they say in Little Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, you know, all winter, but no Christmas. That I get that. I get how people can see that.
Well, for the three of us, our whole lives are built around our home. We all spend a lot of time in our home. And I think to your point, that's going to have a big effect on how we perceive this season of wintering and staying inside. But the other day there was some broken water lines in my neighborhood and the city guys were out here working and it was in the single digits. They're out here working with the water line. I was like, oh, I do not envy them right now. That is hard, grueling work. And I feel quite sure they don't think winter is as cozy as I do.
Yeah. And on one of those nights where it was negative 42 wind chill, our furnace stopped working. And we had to wait until the next day when someone was going to be able to come out and service it. And so all night long, we would hit restart on it. And it was the worst thing because it was like, we would restart it. It would run for 10 minutes and then it would take 20 minutes after it turned off to restart it again. And so we were running the oven and running back and forth between the furnace and opening the oven to try to keep the house warm enough so that the pipes wouldn't freeze and burst. And the whole time I was just thinking of these Little House on the Prairie books and of them having to twist straw to burn because everyone was out of wood, and the fact that, you know, somebody had to be feeding the fire and making sure that it didn't go out so people wouldn't freeze to death. And just but yeah, we live in a time where we aren't hand washing our laundry and then having to hang it outside to freeze solid to dry and then bringing it back in and waiting for it to like thaw out. And the three of us, like you said, like we don't have farm animals that we're having to tend and all of that. So we do have.
My friend with chickens was not having a good time the other day.
I always preface it about I don't have livestock. You know, we grew up, we didn't have livestock. We were really little when we got rid of the livestock. So we don't have livestock. And that's why I enjoyed winter. Dad was home. He wasn't out, you know, sun up to sundown. You know, harvesting, doing, we get off a harvest, you know, and then you have winter where you're home and it can be cozy. It can be games and books and those things, but it's what my memory serves me. That's what I enjoyed about it. I mean, if, I remember being snowed in and not having electricity, but it wasn't bad. You know, we handled it, but I'm like you. I think those that have to work outside in it, I don't think they want to come home and read a cozy book.
Well, I have a book on my list that also, it traumatized me. It's an adult nonfiction. It's called The Best Land Under Heaven. It's The Donner Party and the Age of Manifest Destiny by Michael Wallace. And you probably haven't read that book, but probably you know the story. But it... I had never heard of the Donner Party until it was mentioned in the RA group as
the Nathan Hale books.
Yes, I think it was a content consideration for one of the Nathan Hale books. And I just Googled it and was utterly horrified. But it kind of started this like sick fascination where I was like, I need to know more. This is it. I couldn't look away. And so I found this book and it's a very comprehensive, detailed play by play of the entire journey. And when you said when it was negative 42 wind chill and you kept thinking of, this is what I was thinking of. I was sitting by my fire holding my 2-year old and I read it when I was nursing her. So we can say 2 years ago, 2 winters ago, is when I read it. And those still are
some happy hormones to be passing through.
Girl, it was, really. I don't know why I read this when I was nursing a newborn, but for whatever reason, that's what I chose. And I sit there and I'm just holding her in my lap, talking to her and thinking how squishy she is and her belly is round and her cheeks are warm. And I just thought, praise God that this baby is so well cared for. But also I couldn't stop thinking about the babies on that journey and the book. I mean, I don't want to overshare what the book says, but some of the details given just have stayed with me. And it's traumatizing. But what you were saying earlier, like, why do people choose this? I'm like, why did you, like, you could have stayed home. Mm-hmm. And I feel quite sure that with my personality being who I am, I would not have been on that trip in the first place. I would have stayed home and said, y'all can go. I'm gonna stay here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's really interesting. Just the concept of like knowing stories that yes, may traumatize us, but I think it also helps us in our humanity to realize how large and small the world are at the same time. Right. Like you get to relate to being a mother to the other mothers that were on there and be able to like empathize with them and feel some of the secondhand trauma of what they would have experienced. And then at the same time, it's like, okay, I'm going to make some decisions so that I don't end up
right
in that situation. And it's hard, but I was, talking to a young man a couple weeks ago who had expressed interest in one of my daughters, and I was gently letting him down. But but as part of telling him that, like, maybe he should just be focusing at this time in his life on becoming the type of person who would deserve the type of women that my daughters are becoming, that that one of the things he needed to do is, and not because I even don't think he is doing this, but just because I've been feeling this more and more strongly, I was like, go hear people's stories. Mm-hmm. Like, you need to hear other people's stories because the world is so big and the story of humanity is so big. And I think that especially when we grow up in small churches or small homeschool communities or small towns, we can think that like that's the world and it's not. And we aren't stuck in those situations, and not that they're even like I'm stuck in this, but like if we don't know that there's more out there, we may not seek more. And sometimes more is what, or even seek different, you know, does this make any sense? Sometimes we don't know that we can go beyond our town or our church or our homeschool community, when really the Lord may be calling us somewhere else. And I think that reading missionary stories and stories of people who even aren't missionaries but have gone on service projects and done things in the world, and their experience of being the outsider and the person who's different, like those are just really good stories to read secondhand if you can't go have a firsthand experience with it at that time.
Well, and how interesting that I'm over here talking about how this book, I'm over here like, I'm gonna stay home. And it took you about 30 seconds to get to, for you to get to stories can also compel you to leave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's why we need a variety, right? Because some of the stories might scare us and make us want to make our world smaller. Yes. And some of the stories might
inspire us.
Yeah. Inspiration and courage to go.
But isn't that how seasons are? You know, it's the cold of winter that nips everything to allow growth to happen in the spring and the summer. You know, we have to have the harvest. We have to have those seasons in our life. And we can't be stuck. You know, something that might minister to us in winter is not necessarily going to minister or speak truth to us and be good and beautiful in the middle of summer. Yeah. And that's where literature comes in. That's where being broad about our reading scope allows us to have feelings and empathy for other things that we don't experience.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's part of what my goal with this year's reading challenge theme was to encourage people to read outside of their circle, outside of where they are, outside of what they've experienced, just to help on all of these themes that we're talking about. But with the seasonal theme that you're talking about, Charlessa, I really think that there's a lot to be said for the fact that winter is for rest and introspection. Because if we look at the seasons, that's what the ground is doing. The ground is resting. The ground is renewing. I am terrible at statistics, but I was quite impressed with whatever the number was of how much nitrogen is given to the earth through snow, because it takes it out of the air and brings it and puts it on the earth. And I was like, that's just incredible, because, like, you know, when you're looking at companion planting and all this, there's all this, you know, these are nitrogen plants. And I'm like, but the snow and like in the snow areas, that's bringing all this nitrogen too. And that's awesome. But just the ground is resting and these things are being brought to it. And so I think that sometimes those books are bringing things to us to help us process, to help us move through our own story and things that maybe things that we're struggling with or things that we are choosing to not think about. Stories can bring them to light and put them in front of our face and be like, no, you need to face this. You need to grieve well. You need to process well. You need to face this piece of your past that you don't really want to acknowledge even happened. Like, that's not healthy for your body, because the body keeps the score. And so I think the seasons help us to move from this season of rest. You know, next we'll talk about spring sometime and seasons of growth and all of that. But I think that it's okay to rest in winter, in our spirits and in our communities and our homes, and just do a renewal. And I don't know, that's just what I always think with winter. Like, I don't choose to feel guilty about sitting around and snuggling up with my kids and reading stories and filling their hearts with that, because I know that come spring they're going to be outside all the time and we're not going to be doing as many read alouds, and that this is our time to reconnect and just renew our minds a bit.
Absolutely.
So another book that I had on here that Inara contributed was Darewood Inc. by Jerry Massey, who's an author that we've had on the podcast before. And that's a really fun and funny winter-related book for elementary and middle school, is probably the target audience. And then I don't even know how this one didn't jump to mind, but Inara was like, well, obviously A Place to Hang the Moon by Albus, very winter-heavy. And that one, I think, also shows different ways that winter is faced, like we were talking about. Like, there's the poverty experience of winter, which is far from pleasant or sustainable. And then there's the, like, more warm and cozy, where love is, experience of winter. And
see why people wouldn't like winter if they didn't have a furnace.
Yes.
I mean, that was probably not the best evening for y'all when you guys didn't have a furnace.
No, it was not
pleasant. Yeah. But I'm just like, you know, the rest of us are up here. Okay, is your furnace fixed? Okay, great. We'll pray for more snow now.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
You know, because it's enjoyable if you have all the things surrounding you. When you guys were sick, I remember texting, have you done a Walmart pickup? Because you need to make sure you get, the snow's going your way. It's coming. Right. So you better get some plans done. And if you're not good about planning, if home is not warm and cozy to you, you're not going to enjoy it. But I will say, we are reading out loud Jerry Massey's Dreadwoods series. Yeah, right now. And the kids, that's what we moved on after. Mooses and Bazookas, you know, just roll into something cozy after that.
Yeah. So, that is a fun one.
So I read another winter nonfiction after I read about the Donner Party.
What direction did we go?
Well, I was still nursing my newborn. Yeah. And it was still, I think, winter here. It was either like late fall or early spring, somewhere in there. But it's another, but I actually really recommend this one. Not that I don't recommend the other, but this one was not as punishing. It's called The Cruelest Miles by Gay Salisbury, and it's very small font, Laney Salisbury. It's about the sled dog run in 1925 to Nome, Alaska, where this little town had an outbreak of diphtheria, and they needed this drug. And the only way to get there was through a sled dog run. And, of course, Disney made the movie Balto. It was not Balto hardly did anything. He Disney did not tell the story well, not very accurately. There was one dog in particular who ran a whole lot more miles than any other dog, and one guy who did more. But I thought the author did a really nice job of talking about. Well, he gave me a good context for the history of American development of Alaska, mm-hmm. the people who were there before it was a United States. And one of the things that struck me was that there are a lot of people who participated in that relay. We don't know their names. We know the names of all the white guys. But there were a lot of Native Alaskans who participated. The history didn't even record their name. Mm-hmm. And there were some dogs died on the way. It was really intense. There were a lot of people worked really hard and sacrificed terribly to save this town, to bring this medicine to this town. And it was, I'm not making it sound very inspirational. I'm making it sound like another punishing story, but it was actually, it was so rewarding to get to the end and to say they worked so hard, but look what they did. They worked, they accomplished something that none of them could have done as individuals. Mm-hmm. None of them could have done without these animals working alongside them. The technology at the time was not going to get it done.
Yeah.
So I really, obviously it's wintry, but I really recommend it for any season when you need a good inspiration. I could boost. Something to make you think positively about humanity.
Yeah, I like that. That sounds like a good one. Gemma had a contribution. So if you have read Jamin Still's The Master of Tides or his short story collection, The Awakening, set in Hibaria, then you also should check out his picture book, Ellen and the Winter Wolves, if you just want to see more in this world. And I will say that you have to get it through his website, jaminstill.com, and he has about 70 copies left in hardcover, and then when it reprints, it may only be available in paperback, but it is a verbose picture book, so very wordy, not something to read to a toddler at bedtime, but Gemma really enjoyed it, and this is definitely one of those books where kids, you know, in junior high and high school that enjoy world building can also really enjoy this picture book. And coming from Jamin Still, the illustrations, of course, are stunning. And so we really enjoy the book Ellen and the Winter Wolves, as obviously from the title is very wintry. Lots of snow. And I feel that that book has a lot of echoes of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe in it, because there's just like statues in the snow that always make me think of the White Witch's Garden. And so it just has that like dark winter feeling. Mm-hmm. So it's not your feel good winter book. It's your what's going to happen next. And is this going to turn out okay for everyone? Winter book. So I like that. But it's beautiful, like everything he produces.
So y'all know I read a lot of biblical fiction. I really enjoy it. And the reason I enjoy it is because it helps me to, it gives me a better grasp, a more realistic view of what it would have been like for the people living in that time and in those places. Mm-hmm. I don't have a strong history background, and it helps fill in a lot of gaps for me. And I think a good biblical fiction isn't saying this is how it happened, but it could have. It's real enough, and it sticks to what we know from scripture, and it doesn't give you anything that you know, well, it obviously didn't happen that way.
Yeah.
But something you said early in the podcast about like sometimes you just have these long seasons of, I wish I could remember exactly what you said, but it reminded me of a book that I've recommended here before called Land of Silence by Tessa Afshar. She has become one of my favorite living authors. Her books, I think, are very beautiful. But what I love is they're easy reads, they're quick reads, but some of them are really powerful, and they teach my heart very deep and true things in a way that I think would be hard to get that deep in a way other than through a good story. Mm-hmm. But Land of Silence is not a winter, literally winter book. But if you're in a wintering season where you have a prolonged suffering or a prolonged whatever the, you know, right. difficulty where you need some long rest, mm-hmm. I highly recommend Land of Silence as a really beautiful story to live in.
Yeah.
During that time.
Yeah.
It like, wasn't on my list. I just thought of that while you were talking.
Yeah. I also like Treasures of the Snow by Patricia mm-hmm. St. John for that, because it is technically a winter book. Like it has a lot. It opens on Christmas and it ends in a snowstorm. And so there's a lot of winter scenes on the Alps that are going on in it, but it is hands down, I think, the best book on forgiveness that I've read in my life, and was so impactful as a kid that having not read it for 25 years, I was able to like accurately start to finish narrate it to someone a few years ago when I was like, oh, people should be talking about this book. But that one's beautiful also because it's stories of forgiving others and forgiving yourself and being willing to humble yourself in that whole process. And it deals with multiple characters working on the same thing of multiple ages. And so you have a young boy and an elderly man going through a parallel journey, and then a young girl also going through it. And so I just think it's beautiful in that way, that everyone can see themselves in the story easily in multiple ways, like just not just the experience, but also the age and gender of the character. But that's just a totally beautiful scenery and also story one for that emotional processing that you're talking about and being able to sit in that.
Amber, didn't I tell you that I'm moving to the Baltic?
No, but that sounds pleasant.
Didn't that come up? Charles and I have discussed it. Yes. And what I think Charles is going to move with me, and you can come too. And the thing is when we move to the Baltic, we're going to have the giant windows that you see in like mm-hmm. Norwegian architecture. We will continue to have Walmart delivery, obviously.
Of course, obviously.
We will, of course, have high-speed internet, but we're going to tell people that we don't. The firewood will be never ending.
Stop! You're telling all our secrets. You need to stop.
But you did have, Charlotte, you had one really great idea that I feel like needs to be said. Charlotte pointed out one thing that I was overlooking, and I can't believe I had such a gap, but she was so smart to think of this. We also have to have a person built in to clean the giant windows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just looking at smudges all the time with kids.
And if you're dealing with a snowstorm, you're also dealing with like snow that's slapped up against it and then you can't see. And that's a problem.
So we'll have someone to shovel the snow too. Yeah. We're going to have all these things worked out.
Yeah.
But I'm glad we're having this conversation, because now I know all the books that we need to bring with us when we move to the Baltic.
As long as you have the Northern Lights, I'm there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really enjoyed with this last snowstorm that we had, I think the two books that I felt most connected to picture book wise would be Katie and the Big Snow by Virginia Lee Burton, watching all the snow plowing going on and all the road clearing and just being so grateful for that. And then also a funny book, I don't know if you've read this one, Kimberly, but you would love it, Cold Snap by Eileen Spinelli.
No, but I'm going to look it up right now.
And Eileen Spinelli is a great author. And Cold Snap is just this fun book. It feels like it's probably New England. That's the impression I got anyway, but just a smaller town and how they're dealing with the cold, like putting out burn barrels that people can warm up around, and how the cold snap just kind of drags on, and it's like just not as fun by the end of it as it is at the beginning of it, which I appreciated the honesty of. But that was definitely two books that we were relating to a lot during our last snowstorm. And then a book that Inara and Gemma and I really enjoyed in the last few years that they brought up that should be on the list is My Side of the Mountain by Jean Craighead George, because that's just such a fun wilderness survival book. And they love the fact that he was out there with his parents' permission surviving all of this. And winter was the time that adults came to check in on him and make sure that he was doing okay. And but it's just really cool seeing how resourceful he was and creative, and just remembering how much creativity goes into survival and making do with what you have and finding new uses for it and finding good uses for it. So
what age would you recommend for that one, Amber?
So he's a young teen, and I think that, like, I don't see any reason why 8 and up couldn't read it.
Could you read aloud to a younger kid?
Yeah. I would definitely be a read aloud. So I would say, like, I think they're really going to enjoy it when they're able to do stuff, but there's no reason.
It's not troubling?
It's not troubling. There was no reason it couldn't just be an all ages family read aloud where some of the kids might connect to it more and enjoy it more than others.
Yeah. I read it to Corbin at 8. Yeah. Corbin at 8. Yeah.
Well, I see it recommended a lot, and I always think it sounds good, but something about, like, I have it, and when I look at it and read the description, I always hesitate because it looks like it might be a little, I don't know if scary is the right word, but a little much.
Yeah, when I was younger, before I finally read it, I thought it was going to be dry, and it was not dry. And okay. I also don't feel that it was scary. Like, there are some suspenseful situations he finds himself in just being in nature, but is honestly it sweet? Yes, it is very sweet. Okay. And I love the family element of support and it's just really community brilliant. Members
there's a yeah, few the community, community. Too.
Mm-hmm. His relationship with the librarian and the shopkeeper and
I have a question for y'all. Mm-hmm. Do you ever in the winter want to read books that are distinctly not wintry? And if you do you have no? Okay. I was going to say, what are your favorite non-literally winter books that you would read to feel warmer when your bones are cold?
I just take a bath and read a winter book.
Okay.
That warms up my bones just fine. I think I'm kind of one of those wherever you are, be fully there sort of people in a lot of areas of my life. And so I think that winter is kind of like that too. Like, I'm in winter, so I don't mind reading winter books. Like, I might read a summer book, but it's not because I sought it out because I was looking to not be reading winter books.
I had a few yesterday when I was thinking about my list. I had a few books that are set in Egypt or the Mediterranean that kind of kept coming to mind. And I'm like, why is this coming to mind when I'm over here trying to think winter books? And I finally realized it's because I think sometimes the contrast, I like that it makes mm-hmm. me feel warm. So I don't know. That's a different way of wintering, I guess. Yeah. That's instead of being where you are, that's straight up escapism.
Yes. So I think, obviously, we have to bring up Lord of the Rings, like every episode. Fellowship of the Rings. They leave Rivendell on Christmas Day. So the girls are like, don't forget, Lord of the Rings is a winter book. So we have our Fellowship of the Rings representing for Middle Earth winter. But I think that one of my favorite books that I read with the kids in the last couple years would be Elephant in the Garden by Michael Morpurgo. And that one is just excellent. It's a World War II book that takes place on the other side of the situation. Like, people are always asking for books that took place in Germany or Nazi, you know, areas or Japan. And so there's a picture book called Faithful Elephants, A True Story of Animals, People, and War. And that is a zookeeper and elephant story that took place in Japan. Because the concept is countries that were in serious bombing territory their zoo animals became a point of concern, because if the bombs took out the fences and all of a sudden you have tigers and lions or elephants stampeding through town, you're going to have even more damages and issues. And so the Faithful Elephants picture book, oh my gosh, if you want to just like have a good sob, that is the book for you. If you want to traumatize your teens for life, require them to read that. And we own it because I think some aspects of history really need to be seen and considered in how things like war, which just seems large and maybe it doesn't affect my life, really does affect individuals and animals and things in a very intimate and painful way. But on the other side, we have Elephant in the Garden, which I think is very tastefully handled. It is inspired by a true story. And so there's an author's note in the back about that, about the story that inspired him. But this is the same situation, but happening in Europe. And the woman and her children, because obviously the husband is off fighting, the woman and her children take in the elephant. She's raised it from a baby, has convinced the zookeepers to let her keep it in their garden, and then their city gets bombed. And so they have to join the people leaving. One of my favorite aspects of this book is that it is in Germany. And in the beginning, before the war, we see their, you know, this is post-World War I, right? And so we see this little sliver of time in between the world wars and how family dynamics are leading up to World War II, where they go to their aunt and uncle's house every summer and have their whole lives. But now they're at their aunt and uncle's house and the parents are fighting. And you're hearing like this propaganda that the aunt and uncle have been believing about the Jews, and that the mom and the dad are rejecting about the Jews. And this is causing a rift in their family. And so you're seeing the whole process of like what type of propaganda led to the common people being willing to enter this war in Germany. And I think it's just really age appropriately and beautifully handled. And so then they go trying to find a safe place with this elephant. They stumble upon an Allied soldier who now the mother in good conscience can't just let him be killed. And so they're pretending he's part of their family group. And but all of this is being told by a very elderly woman in a nursing home. It's her story, and she's telling it because her nurse's young son reminds her of her brother. And so it's like triggered this memory here at the end of her life, and she's telling them this story. And so it's just beautifully done, beautifully told. And there's a reason that this author is like the author in residence in England or something, whatever that role is that they have. He's a beautiful storyteller, and I can't recommend the books of his that I've read enough, but this one is definitely right up there.
Well, I think you can add Hannah's Cold Winter.
That's what I was about to say.
And that was, as I was thinking about it too, those were the two, if you like Elephant in the Garden, absolutely, a good picture book would be Hannah's Cold Winter.
Mm-hmm. And it's Hannah's Cold Winter was one of the very first books I thought of yesterday when I was thinking about this, but I didn't put it on my list because I figured y'all would already have it on your list.
Yeah. I love that book. When Purple House Press was selling out of their hardcovers, I bought like 10 of them and I give them away to people. I gave one to my plumber and people who come in and they're like, yeah, we read aloud to our grandkids. I'm like, definitely, you should have this book then. Yeah. But that's a great one on Budapest. Well, actually, Buddha and Pest. I did not know that those were two places before I read this book. But yeah, so Buddha and Pest and their gorgeous zoo, outdoor like castle looking zoo that had hippos, and how the community rallied to find enough food for the hippos for overwinter for Hannah the hippo. That one's just, love it. And that one's also very gentle. So.
Mm-hmm. What goes back to where literature bridges the gap, like where you might be hearing about the war and you know the tragedy and the drama of war, but what else did it also affect? And so when mm-hmm. Kimberly's talking about Christian fiction, you know, learning about that time period so that you can intermix with the truth helps mm-hmm. you bridge the gap in your brain. And that's yeah. where we need to be. No, yeah. we read Hannah's Cold Winter this year to my kiddos. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't remember if I've shared this story before or not, but I was narrating Hannah's Cold Winter to my father-in-law when we were living with them after the fire, because I narrate books to anybody who's sitting across from me. And he was like, I've been there. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, no, I've been to like what you're describing. I've been there to where they have the hippos. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, that trip that I took to Iceland, I also went to Budapest. And so he brings out this like box of slides and this little slide viewer. And we spent hours with the kids just poring over these slides and him telling stories from his post-college trip that he had taken decades ago. And it was just this like beautiful family experience that wouldn't have been, spurred on if we hadn't been talking about Hannah's Cold Winter and hadn't made that connection to our own experience. So I love that aspect of sharing books and stories is the personal stories that very often come from them.
Well, I think that's one reason why. So for Christmas this year, I picked a short list of some of my favorite reads from 2023, and I got a copy. I got several sets and I gave them a set away to several different people so like in my husband's family, I gave the same set to three or four different people. And mm-hmm. I said, now we can all read, because I'm dying to talk about these books. I love these yeah. books. They affected me or they influenced me or otherwise they're just staying with me. And I want them to read these books so that we can discuss yeah. it together. And I want them to talk about it amongst themselves because I want all these stories to be in all of our minds. And, right. and I think that's kind of what you're saying is I was over here asking myself, is it selfish to want them to read the same books just because I read and enjoyed them? And I am motivated in wanting them to enjoy them, but I'm really motivated and I want to be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
I want to have these shared experience of the story, even though it's not actually my story.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is really valuable. I think that the stories that we share are the stories we remember. And I think that's very Charlotte Mason also. Like, if you have to be able to retell it to really, mm-hmm. truly have internalized it. And if you can retell it, then you can prove that you've internalized it, which is really important for our kids. But I think I model it for my kids by narrating books to all my friends and my in-laws and whoever I think might connect with a story that I'm talking about. And that encourages them to narrate to each other and to their friends. I told the girls that they should start their own podcast because they just sit and talk about these books for hours together every morning. I'm like, I'm sure that there's other kids who would love to like listen to your pontifications and then go and like talk to their siblings or talk to their friends about the books you guys are talking about.
Just secretly record them. Don't tell them.
Yes. I told Inara, I was like, we could like pretend record for a really long time and just not tell Gemma that we're really recording. And then even be like, oh, by the way, we put some episodes together.
But those are the moments we want when we start to see our kids bridge that gap and yeah. see it. Like, I want books on my shelf for my kids when they see it later in life, go, oh, mom had that on their shelf. So there mm-hmm. must be a reason why. You know, it used to be yeah. like, if the library had it, I didn't really need it. But now it's, I want them to be able to say, well, mom had that on a shelf for some reason. Mm-hmm. I might not have the exact copy, but mom had that book on the shelf for a reason. Or mom yeah. chose to read this book to me for a reason.
Yeah.
And then they can do it. And I think there needs to be a list or something about books that grandparents need. Mm-hmm. Because I think there needs to be a collection at grandma, grandpa's house that they read to us. Not these long, I mean, they can be short picture books, like short. Yeah. Kids need to see, oh, grandma and grandpa had that on their shelf for me. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to take up a lot of space, just some.
Yeah. I don't hate that idea. I think it's a great idea. My personal experience has been that I have just allowed the books I have no interest in reading to live at my in-laws. Because they don't mind reading them to the kids. And the kids want them anyway. I just don't want to read them.
Oh, okay.
And so my in-laws, who don't mind reading whatever the kids ask them to read, then they can read them to them and to ad nauseum. And
I think it'd be very difficult to curate such a small... Like, Charlotte, so you were holding up your hand and indicating the size of the spot on the shelf is the space between your thumb and your index finger. And I'm like, how do you curate such a small list of books for grandparents?
But I think grandparents are so overwhelmed, and they have a lot. Even if it was just 10 books, then those 10 books is what grandma had for me.
I think it's really cool too if you ask the grandparents what their favorite books were when they were little, because they aren't generally going to say Bernstein Bears. Like, they'll probably have something that was a more special book in their childhood, or what was the favorite book that you had that you read to me when I was a kid that connected to you, and then make sure that there's copies of those available, because that's more of a like genuine connection versus
don't get me wrong, I think it's a very charming idea.
Yeah,
I love the idea. I just would struggle.
You would struggle down with the 6 inches.
Yes. Just
fill up a bookshelf, Kimberly, and call it good.
I can do a shelf.
Yeah.
And see, I have a minimalist mother-in-law that she gets rid of, once they're done with it, they get rid of it.
Yeah.
And so, although if she would take the time to read to the kids, I think that would create some memories. Mm-hmm. But once again, I'm bumped up against a different mindset. Yeah. So, you know, 3 to 6 inches is all my mother-in-law
that's all
might
you get.
Give me.
Right.
If she gives me. And she probably wouldn't, because she'd say, well, your kids are 13 and 10. They don't need these picture books. Well, no, if you sat there and read, my 10 and 13-year-old will come sit beside you and listen to those.
Ellen and the Winter Wolves. They would listen to that one.
They would listen to that one. That was one of them. I even think Brave Eileen is a great one to add to that. That shows perseverance and family work and working together. Some of those things that we want to pass on from generation to generation.
Yeah.
I like that. Amber, you started this podcast with a poem. And yesterday I kept thinking about Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. And I was trying to tell him about it, and I was like, who is the author? And I couldn't for the life of me, I could not think. And I was like, Jack Frost was the only name I could think of. and he's just like, you mean Robert? Yeah, that's the one. So now in my mind it's always going to be Jack
Frost.
Did you
see it on Instagram? I actually shared it this week. I found a version of him reading his own poem and shared it, and it was just beautiful. Like, I love listening to people read their own material. That's part of why I love Charlotte's Web on audiobooks so much, is knowing that the author struggled so hard to read through the last chapter because he kept crying. So I love finding recordings of older people reading things. But I have a Robert Frost poem called Dust of Snow. The way a crow shook down on me, the dust of snow from a hemlock tree, has given my heart a change of mood and saved some part of a day I had rued.
Can I just say, I think Robert Frost is one of my favorite poets from memory work. He's some of the earliest poets that my kids start to memorize. Lydia could do The Road Not Taken and Stopping by Woods when she was 6, and in both of those cases, I think they're 4 stanzas. So for a kid that age, it feels like a lot. So they feel very accomplished, but because it rhymes and because it's very rhythmic and because the words themselves are familiar words, not, you know, really old or unfamiliar words, it's actually, from a difficulty standpoint, not actually that hard. But it gives a nice feeling of accomplishment. So I would say, for anyone who wants to do more memory work and needs a place to start, I really recommend Robert Frost.
Yeah.
And because the poems have that evoke such strong feelings of seasons and weather, I feel like it's easy to come back to. I mean, to this day, when we're in the fall, when we're driving around, when my kids see orange leaves, the back seat just starts quoting The Road Not Taken. And I feel like as a mother, I fail in so many ways and I miss so much. And I, there are so many gaps that I have to trust the Lord to fill in my parenting. Mm-hmm. So when the backseat starts quoting Robert Frost, I feel like I've done something. Yes. We have accomplished something somewhere.
I love that feeling. And I'm
grateful for those victories.
Yeah. Robert Frost is definitely a good poet to start with. And so is Emily Dickinson. She has so many shorter poems. And the publishing house Bushel and Peck, I really like a lot of the stuff that they're publishing. And they have a gorgeous book for Robert Frost, Emily Dickinson, and Edgar Allan Poe. And they're just, they're stunning and lovely. And the illustrations are fantastic. And then they also have like prompts inside them after the poem. Like some of it's like discussion prompts, but some of it's also like, go and do this, like go and write something with this theme or like that. And so I like that, especially for older kids. If you're trying to woo them into a poet, I think that these three books can be a really good way to do that. If, like you said, you haven't done poetry yet with your kids and you're wanting to fill that in, these books from Bushel and Peck could be a really good place to start. Yesterday, I was doing voice to text on my phone looking for a specific poem from Emily Dickinson. And I said, Emily Dickens. And then I stopped and Inara across the room, she's like, that is not her name. Emily Dickinson. And I'm like, I'm doing voice to text and it already finished filling it in. So I just stopped talking. But yes, I agree with you. She like looks at me funny. She's like, it's not going to find it. That's not her name. I was like, oh no, it already found it. Don't even worry about it. Well, I had two more books, guys, that I really wanted to mention. One is more of a winter indoor book. And it's called A Hat for Mrs. Goldman, A Story for Knitting and Love by Michelle Edwards. And this is actually an Iowa author, and it's a picture book. And it's Mrs. Goldman is the Jewish woman who lives in the apartment building and knits for people. And the little girl has been the recipient of her knitting. And then she knits a hat for Mrs. Goldman, who never receives anything back for her gifts. And it's just this really sweet community and neighborly and doing unto others book. And I really like the illustrations. I think they're very sweet. But that's also one of Amanda's favorite picture books, period. She's always recommending. So I think she may have recommended it at the beginning of season one, but thought I'd mention it again as a good winter book for your little knitters and crafters. And then the other one is a chapter book, Bargain Bride by Evelyn Sibley Lampman. Mm-hmm. And it captures a period of history that doesn't get captured very much, which is child brides in America with the Western expansion. And so she has been brided to a older gentleman who married her and then went west, but she stayed behind with her abusive extended family that was raising her because she was an orphan. And the deal was, if you were married, you got a lot more property. And so men would marry young girls and then with that marriage license, go and get the property and set up homes and then go back for the girls later when they came of age. And so she has come of age at, I think, 15, I believe, and has been picked up by her husband, who we see is actually a very kind man and very considerate and has prepared a lovely home for her. And then Evelyn does us all a favor by having him die the first night before anything happens. So now our little heroine is a wealthy widow and trying to navigate life alone and befriends a Native American woman who she finds living in a building on the property with her young child. And so there's some historical cultural stuff there that's really important to talk with our kids about. But I think it's a great mother-daughter read. I read it by myself as a kid, but then I talked to my mom about it a lot. But it would just be a really nice book to read with a teen girl, a young teen or older teen also. but a lot of it takes place in winter. She's overwintering in the house by herself, and well, not by herself. She has the Native American woman with her, but nobody knows that. So everybody thinks she's by herself doing this. And it's definitely a coming of age book as well. So if you're looking for a coming of age book, this is a great one. But I just love Evelyn Sibley Lantman's books. And I'm really glad there was one that fit this category to recommend. So did you ladies have any others?
I kept thinking about a song.
Yeah.
And it's not really what we're here for, but there is a song called
There Are No Rules, Kimberly. Go for it.
That is my favorite. I thrive in a place without rules. There's a song called In Like a Lion by Reliant K. Always Winter, Never Christmas. And I came across the song when I was in college, which is actually when I first read the Narnia series. And a friend introduced me to it after I was telling him how much I enjoyed these books. And I'm not a huge fan of Reliant K one way or another, but this song has always, I hear it in my head a lot. It's one, you know, it doesn't come on the radio. You're never going to hear it out in the world. You have to seek it out. And yet, even though it never comes to me organically, it just stays, you know, my head hears it a lot in the wintertime. So I think apparently I have a lot of affection for the stories and songs that just stay. But it's a good one for when you need a, maybe you can't read a whole book right this minute, but you can listen to a song.
Yeah, and it can bring the book to mind.
Yeah. I had great. Other books on my list for if you said, yeah, I like reading like, you know, books about Egypt in the winter, but you don't. So that's what I was looking at my list. No, that's the rest of my list. I was going to ask if you have any picture books or lighter chapter books, historical fiction, anything for set in Russia, Siberia, like the really harsh, cold winter, to bring that setting, to make it approachable. Because in my head, I'm over here like Karenina and nothing, you know.
Yeah.
At this stage in my life, I'm in a hard pass and I would like something a little easier, or, you know, than War and Peace, to spend some time in that place. And I wonder if you have any suggestions.
Well, there's a picture book, How a Shirt Grew in the Field. And that one is set in Russia. And so that has family life, but it is two seasons, right? So it has like the growing of the ingredients for a shirt, or the not ingredients, but whatever. The materials. There we go. The growing of the materials for the shirt, and then winter
in the oven.
Winter for the just bake it up. Winter for the making of the shirt. That's the first one that comes to mind.
I didn't ask you ahead of time, so I just want our listeners to know this is completely off the cuff. Amber had no time to prep for this.
I know. So I like that theme as well. And there are some books that I have purchased to read on that theme, but I have not read them yet. And so I really am hesitant.
You can send me the list and I can start. I'll read some. Because that's what I've been in the mood for and I didn't know where to go.
Yeah. Does it have to be Russia? Could it be Sweden?
I mean, I already told you I'm moving there. So
yeah. Sweden's okay. Fine. So I have not read more than The Dust Jacket and a few pages throughout it. But I love the author Lillian Budd. And she has a book called April Snow. And it's set in Sweden, peasant woman, end of the 19th century for setting. And that's one that has been on my short list of books to read. And then I think, and then I'll look up this other one. There's a few that are definitely set in Russia in the snow, and I know exactly where they are on my shelf, and I will grab them for you, and then I will add them to the show notes for people that are interested in what they were.
Yeah, eBay has April Snow for $6.50.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Perfect. I did have one book that I wanted to mention that I have not read yet, but it has been my comfort book this winter. So the author generously sent me a copy because I really wanted to read it. And I have just been so unreasonably busy and like goes against everything I believe for winter. So I've not had a chance to read it, but I have carried it around with me everywhere in its nice little white tissue paper wrapping tied with a bow, knowing that at some point I would be able to sit down and read this book. And so I finally sat down and started reading it. I'm two chapters in and it's delightful. But it would be a good YA adult option. YA not in the spicy YA, more of the, this book is literally set in winter, always winter, never Christmas type winter. And it's called Frostlight by Danielle Bullen, B-U-L-L-E-N. And I have followed her on Instagram for a year, and she's the sweetest human being. And so I can only imagine that that is going to also be in all of her books that she is writing. But this this is definitely a winter book, Frostlight, and it's my current read, so I thought I would mention it. I can't fully endorse it, having not finished it yet, but everything I know about her and the reviews of the people that I trust that have read the book, there's not going to be anything objectionable in it.
For the cover is beautiful. Isn't it beautiful? Mm-hmm. And the Kindle is only 99 cents.
Yeah. Yes. So jump in and read it. I asked both of you to read it with me.
Well, yeah, I'm like 50 pages in. So there Sweet. You go.
Yeah. Perfect. So this is going to be our, we'll definitely cover it in a future episode, but I wanted to throw it out there now for people that wanted to have it as a winter read themselves. But thank you, ladies, for coming and talking winter books with me. And we will add all these books and Kimberly's song and the poems that I shared to the show notes, and you guys can find those there. And if you're looking for more winter books, you can definitely check out our free literary database that is on reshelvingalexandria.com that we would love for you guys to be utilizing to find good books for your family. You can do a tag search for winter, and we will talk to you again next time. Remember, the stories are truer than true.